Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, You're the Cure. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, past archive programs. You can catch all the latest and greatest right there, veritasmedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Also, Morley Robbins joining us this morning as well. Good morning, both of you. Good morning to the show.
Good morning, Wade. Good morning, Morley.
Well, it's good to be here. Yes, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good. I'm trying to contain my frustration.
Yeah, don't be controversial again. I mean, my goodness, every time we say something, we get...
Right.
Except over the air, we're good, right? I mean, over the air, we can talk about what we want, but... You get on social media, Dr. Edwards, and you get pummeled.
Censored, yeah. So, Morley, I think I told you our last show last month, it got censored on YouTube. They took it down. I just want to remind all the listeners.
I know, it's sad, isn't it?
Oh, it's... I'm not going to get
started
on this.
We didn't even, and I was here for that show. We didn't really get too wild on that. We didn't just.
No, we.
I don't know what.
I said a lot more. I don't know what their deal was, but I think it was right after Facebook. I did a Facebook Live that went real viral. Went
yeah.
A half million views in a couple days, and they yanked that. So then I think maybe there's some crosstalk between YouTube and Facebook, and they said, yeah, we're just going to take down his YouTube. And so it was Morley's Monday that Monday. So sorry, Morley, you got the brunt of that. But listeners, you can always find it on our website, veritasmedical.com. Go over to the resource tab and down to radio shows, and everything's archived. And we put all Morley shows into one category you can see under Morley. So always you can go there, and it'll be replayed there. I'm sure it's still on iTunes. And I'm really going to try not to talk much on, or really at all on COVID. So number one, Morley's show doesn't get censored again. But number two, because I'll just get so frustrated. I mean, what happened last week with all those doctors in D.C.? I mean, 600 different doctors signed this letter, and then a bunch of those showed up, and a bunch were on Skype, too, just to give their testimony of here's what's working. Totally censored. Unbelievable. Yep. I mean, it's like, are we living in America or what? And I'm hoping enough people are seeing this now. I
think it's starting to break through a little bit, just my opinion, but it is slow going. No doubt about it.
And, I mean, I don't blame the general public if you're listening to mainstream media because that's all you're hearing. I don't. I tell everybody to turn it off, but occasionally I'll look just to see, have they calmed down yet? Because, I mean,
no.
we're into August now. No, they're not in this whole second wave and blah, blah, blah. And we put J.B. Hanley's 3.0 article on. He did Lockdown Lunacy 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0. And go to jbhanley.com. I think it's a blog. But anyways, we put his article up. Friday, he had his newest article, specifically because it talked about the southern states, Texas in particular. So this little, if you look at the national trend on the daily deaths, there's that little bump. But if you separate out the north versus the south, you know, northern states versus southern, it continues to be over in western Europe, in northern U.S. The southern U.S., if you're below the 35th parallel, you know, you're just now seeing your curves. Well, no, we're on the back side of the curve, but it's the same curve. It's the exact same curve everywhere. Italy, Sweden, New York City, wherever. And actually the southern states, the curve's not quite as high of a hump, but we're on the back end of it. We're on the back end. And this has been known. The biggest thing to me, you know, that stood out to me was this has been known, this 35th parallel thing. They've known about that for a long time. There's a book written about it all. So next week's show, I'll talk all about that. I'll talk about this whole thing with the COVID deal. I don't really want to get into it now, but Morley, I was, as I was thinking about the show today, it crossed my mind, man, I kind of understand how frustrated Morley gets now. Because listeners, y'all, maybe you've picked up on some of Morley's frustration at times, but you know he'll send me some emails, and the frustration, and I understand why. Well, sometimes bleed through in those emails because it's like, man, there's mountains and mountains and mountains of data and literature and research articles going back 100 years with this whole copper iron dysregulation and this iron fortification of our foods. For new listeners, I'm just going to lay the foundation here. So somebody with half information, half truth thought, well, there's anemic pregnant ladies in America. We can't have that. So let's add iron to everyone's food. So iron fortification of our food started mainly cereals, the flour. and it's still in our food. But this iron fortification thing, it was a miscalculation. It turns out most of the iron, like 98% of the iron you need every day, you get from your own recycling system inside the body. You don't need much external iron coming in from the diet. And the little bit that you need, like a milligram a day, is pretty darn easy to get with a basic diet, especially if you're doing animal products. It's real easy to get. So the problem, as long-term listeners know, is iron gets stuck in the tissue. So if someone's anemic, iron not in the blood, then it's because it's stuck. It's stuck in the tissue. So almost always there's plenty of iron in the body. It's just stuck in the tissue, in your liver, in your heart, in your brain, in your joints. It's stuck and it can't be pulled out of the tissue to go to the bone marrow to make more blood cells for you, because that process is blocked. The pulling of iron out of your tissue to make more blood is blocked. And it's mostly blocked because there's no bioavailable copper. There's other factors too, but that's a big one. Probably the biggest is lack of bioavailable copper, lack of retinol, which is animal-based vitamin A from animal fat, animal tissues. So that's the crux of this whole thing. There's excess iron because of iron fortification. There's not enough bioavailable copper because of modern farming techniques, and we don't eat organ meats, and there's not enough retinol because we were told to go on a low-fat diet, and then we do all this other supplementation like artificial vitamin D and synthetic vitamin C and these other things that just contribute to this problem, this iron-copper imbalance and dysregulation. So that's at the very basic root of pretty much all inflammatory-based oxidative stress diseases, which is everything. It also hampers your immune system. It gets your immune system dysregulated so that you have a harder time fighting off COVID. So anyways, Morley obviously has been on this trail of this iron-copper dysregulation for many years, 10-plus years probably now. And the frustration, understandably so, bubbles over from time to time. But Morley, I started to feel that same thing about just the truth not coming out. Just the very basic truths. Even if you're going to use hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and azithromycin, which do have their downsides, but you know, that's what these doctors were talking about doing, and it is shown to be effective in multiple studies around the world and by these doctors' clinical experience. And that's the definition of evidence-based medicine. You look at the evidence published in the literature, but then you also use your own clinical judgment and expertise and experience. And thirdly, evidence-based medicine definition is you take into consideration the patient's values and the patient's belief system, i.e. a Jehovah's Witness who doesn't believe in getting blood products if they come in into the ER bleeding out from a car wreck and they say, I don't believe in blood products. The ER doctor has to not give them blood products. Patients always, at least used to, trump clinical experience, and clinical experience trumps the literature. But you're supposed to look at all three. And so there's a huge amount of frustration for us doctors on the front lines who are trying to practice evidence-based medicine, the original definition, and then seeing what the media is saying and what the bureaucratic heads are saying. It's quite frustrating. But that's as much as I'll say on that right now. We'll talk about it next week's show. I'll spend the whole hour talking about all that. So, Morley, I feel your frustration. We want to not talk about COVID-19. unless you really want to, but I do want to, I know you wanted to maybe get into autoimmunity, which fits in nicely because it's an immune system dysregulation. And that's what I want people to understand. When Morley and I talk about copper iron dysregulation and these various diseases like Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, autism, autoimmune disorders, you can plug in susceptibility to COVID-19 because it's the same underlying factors that make you susceptible to chronic disease that make you susceptible to acute infection, not being able to fight off an acute infection. It's the same stuff that's got your body out of balance. And can it be that simple? Yes, it can be that simple. 100 years ago, there was no heart disease and very rare cancer, and there were people resistant to tuberculosis, while other people were dying from tuberculosis. And the ones dying from it were eating modern, civilized food. And that's the crux of this whole issue. We've got to get back to an ancestral way of living and eating. So, Morley, immune system dysregulation, I think, is the direction we were going to go today, but I know things change in a moment's notice with you, depending on what you read 5 minutes ago, or based on anything I've led off the show with. So feel free to give your input on what I've said, or we can dive into autoimmune stuff.
No, I think for the listeners, I hope they go back and replay what Dr. Ben just said over the last 5 to 7 minutes. Because even though I may have some level of frustration, that I've learned how to harness that frustration to dig deeper and find the truth. So it's like, you know, there are times when I feel like I'm banging my head against the wall. But the most rewarding salve for me is to see practitioners like Dr. Ben, who was a disciple, but now he's an apostle. He's preaching the truth in a way that very few practitioners can in the country or on the planet. And he's incorporated it into not just his practice, but into his whole philosophy. So that's very rewarding for me. And I think the whole basis of these conversations is we're both very devoted to the truth. Dr. Ben puts it in his company title, Veritas Medical. Mine is more implied. But the important thing is what I think we share is this unrelenting desire to get down to the truth. And the phrase that's really been capturing my imagination, I think I may have shared this in a couple emails with you recently, is the phrase molecular mechanism. And what molecular mechanisms mean is there's very predictable and reliable reactions to certain events inside the cells and inside the tissue. And when you begin to pull the curtain back on these molecular mechanisms, especially those that respond to oxygen, suddenly you realize, wait a minute, there's no disease. There may be a pathogen involved, but the whole mechanism is in response to a chain reaction of events that occur because oxygen is not being properly managed. That's profoundly important for people to realize, because suddenly we go from this realm of fear, and again, I spell it differently, F-E-A-R, so people can see the symbol for iron, and that's what fear is all about. Raise your level of iron. And we spend these first Mondays of the month talking about the cure. We spell it differently, C-U-R-E. So we see the symbol for copper so that oxygen can be properly managed by copper. That's the very essence of this whole dialogue, is getting people to realize that the relationship between copper and iron and oxygen is central and primal to whether we're in balance or out of balance. And so one of the concepts that has emerged, we've talked about, but just to reinforce it, is we live on a planet that has oxygen. And 21% of the air we breathe is this oxygen, but it's not a gas. It's actually the second most reactive element on the planet. No one's told us that. They've not put it in that context. And once you understand that we're breathing in a reactive element, second only to fluoride, fluoride is not your friend, but oxygen needs to be harnessed in very precise ways, and there's only one element on the planet that can harness oxygen, and it's called copper. And one of the delights that I've had this summer, had a chance to, just this past weekend, was invited to go to Lancaster County, PA. The Amish community up there have a health fair every year, and they asked me to speak on, you know, my favorite topics. And I realized that I was being invited into a community that lives a very simple lifestyle. So I was really invited to simplify my message. And I boiled it down to horses and buggies. And when push comes to shove, there's a lot of really important enzymes that have iron in them. And that's like a buggy. But if the if the horse is not there, if copper is not there to manage that enzyme, it doesn't work. In the same way that if you don't have a horse, what good is a buggy? And they got it. They got it very quickly, and then I connected the dots that the glyphosate that they're using in their farms is robbing them and their produce and their horses and whatever of the copper that they need to manage this oxygen. There were a lot of opened eyes when I began to connect those dots. So I think it's important for people to realize that we have been endowed with a mineral, copper, that has, it's fascinating. It doesn't just harness oxygen, it harnesses iron. And what's the source of rust on the planet when iron interacts with oxygen? Well, it works the same way outside the body as it does inside the body. Again, they forgot to teach us that. It's a very simple process of every facet of aging is from a mismanagement of iron and oxygen in the body. And one of the most important events that we're all familiar with is this thing called inflammation. And probably every listener who's participating in this radio show or listening to it after the fact has or knows of someone who has inflammation. But I was reading a series of papers over the weekend by a group of iron biologists out of Chile, and the lead author is a woman, Pamela Urrutia, U-R-R-U-T-I-A, who's an absolute genius. She has a real command of the English language, despite the fact that she's it's not her native tongue, but she is very gifted at simplifying messages. And in this one article that she wrote, which has bearing on this autoimmunity, I'm not losing sight of that, but she talks about the fact that when we hear the word inflammation, what it really means is iron accumulation. And it's fascinating that even with all of the reading and research that I've done, I've never boiled it down to that precise a connection. But when you understand the role of the mitochondria, the little energy furnaces inside our cells, and they do amazing things inside our bodies. They're not restricted to just making energy. But one of the most important jobs of the mitochondria is to recycle iron. Because it comes in carrying oxygen, and it's got to go out so it can be recycled in the bone marrow to make more red blood cells. But when Dr. Ben was talking about, you know, 90-some percent of the iron we need comes from a recycling program, it's a very sophisticated, very fascinating part of our physiology, but it's all based on the energy of copper. If copper's not working, the recycling program doesn't work. And so one of the most important things that has to happen is that iron needs to be turned back into either iron-sulfur clusters or heme, and those are proteins that help the mitochondria in the cell do its work. Again, they're little wagons, little tiny wagons that need a horse called copper to make them work, because they don't work without the energy of bioactive copper. And so when the mitochondria is not properly burning oxygen and turning it into water, and it's not able to do that, the oxygen that's left over starts to mix with the iron that's left over, and that's where the rust starts. And so that mechanism of not properly activating oxygen in the mitochondria leads to inflammation. And that mechanism, that molecular mechanism of inflammation, leads to iron accumulation. And when that starts to build, when the iron starts to build more and more, that leads to mitochondrial death and cell death and tissue death. And there is no disease. It's just an aggregation of the breakdown. And so the mechanism, all of these dynamics is really driven by the ease with which the oxygen can be managed by bioavailable copper and the ease with which the mitochondria can recycle the iron. And this is happening in all cells all over the body. It isn't just specific cells, although there's very special work that the mitochondria and the bone marrow do. And what I learned this morning, and I pinged Dr. Ben about where all of these steroid hormones coming from. Everyone's got all sorts of hormone imbalance. Well, it's because oxygen is building inside the mitochondria of the adrenal gland. So who knew? Who would have thought that it was those little mitochondria that weren't reacting with oxygen properly because the mitochondria don't have enough copper? It's the same mechanism, whether we're talking about the adrenal glands, the liver cells, the heart cells, the brain cells, the bone cells. All of these cells have mitochondria, and they've got to deal with this oxygen, and they've got to be able to work with it, turn it into water, ideally, so that the cells can do their job properly. And one of the key, what I came across a few weeks ago, was that there's a key blood test that can be done, and it's called the interleukin-2 production blood test. What the heck's he talking about now? Well, there's all sorts of chemicals that get made when things aren't working right. And they're called cytokines, and they're also called chemokines, depending upon what their structure is and what their function is. But invariably, what they're really trying to do is they're reacting to a mismatch of minerals. There's interleukin-1 and interleukin-6, they're reacting to too much iron. Well, interleukin-2 is really managing the function of a very important part of our immune system called the T cell. And the T cells are these amazingly important parts of our immune system that they have multiple forms of expression. There's TH1, which stands for T helper cell 1. And there's TH2, T helper cell 2. There's TH17, which is like a macrophage. And these cells are responding to what's going on in the tissue, what's happening to oxygen, and is there a pathogen present? And these T cells are especially designed to react to viruses, which is what we've been discussing in earlier conversations. And so these T cells need to have the intelligence to know, should I be, they're like transformers. Think of the T and T cell stands for transformer cell. Should I be TH1? Should I be TH2? Should I be TH17? It depends on what they're sensing in the way of activity in the tissue. And that takes intelligence. And guess what intelligence takes? It takes energy. And if these T cells, if these transformer cells can't make energy, they don't work right. And one of the most important things that they respond to is this cell called interleukin-2, and guess what? It's copper dependent. And that's why that blood test is so important, because it allegedly is the most sensitive test for measuring, does this individual have enough bioavailable copper to get through the day. And so I'm negotiating with the lab to try to lower the cost. Right now it's $199, which I think is obscene, and I'm hoping to get it down around $50. And they're having heartburn trying to reach that level. But we'll keep at it. But the important thing is there is a definitive blood test now that can be ordered by a practitioner to find out what's the real dynamic state of copper status in this body. Because if interleukin-2 is on the low side, then you know without a shred of doubt that copper isn't adequate in the body. And so if it can't make interleukin-2, then it can't run this immune system. And what was a surprise to me was to find out that interleukin 2 deficiency is a hallmark for autoimmune conditions. That if IL-2, that's its abbreviation, if IL-2 is low, there's a very high likelihood that this individual is going to get autoimmune. Well, there's another side to autoimmune. We know that from the research of Nancy Andrews and Rebecca King and Marianne Wesling-Resnick, that the macrophages, the Pac-Men in our body, that are supposed to be the first line of defense, when they start to fill up with iron, because they can't recycle it, because they can't get out the iron exit door, because there's not enough bioavailable copper, when iron starts to build in these cells, they lose their orientation, they lose their intelligence, and then they start to attack the body. And so we've got two sides now. We've got macrophages and these T cells, these transformer cells, are not communicating and not doing their job effectively because they lack bioavailable copper and iron is building in their cells, and then they lose their purpose. They lose their original intended function to keep the body in balance. And again, we keep coming back to the same cast of characters expressing in different cell types, but it's always about the dynamic between copper and iron and oxygen. And that's the primal triangle that brings life on this planet. And if we can't bring enough oxygen to the tissue, because there's not enough hemoglobin, but more importantly, if we can't work with that oxygen, and if we can't recycle that iron, that's when all the chaos begins to happen, regardless of what the label is, regardless of how minuscule or significant it might be. It's the mismanagement of the oxygen and the iron that it's at the basis of all of our symptoms, all of our conditions, and all of the labels that we have been given throughout our life. So hopefully that makes sense and kind of ties together a lot of the things that we've talked about. But I was absolutely fascinated to learn that this blood test that was identified, I thought, well, maybe I should know what interleukin 2 does. And then I was absolutely dumbstruck to find out that when it's deficient, you get autoimmune conditions. And on one level, it makes perfect sense. But it's always surprising to see the literature say, well, yeah, we've known this for 40 years. Like, well, no, I don't think we did know this for 40 years. I don't think it's taught anywhere. But the research scientists seem to talk to each other. I'm not sure how well they're educating the clinicians or the public in their efforts, but at least the information's out there. It is accessible, and it just takes a certain resolve to say, I'm going to connect these dots. So that's been my focus for the last 11 years now. And yes, there are moments of frustration and just sheer, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that this is so obvious. It's just, it takes discipline to keep ringing this bell and to have opportunities like these monthly conversations with Dr. Ben and Wade are very special, because I think over time this Chinese water torture is going to eventually pay huge dividends, because there are going to be more and more apostles like Dr. Ben who are out there preaching but practicing these principles in their day-to-day practice. And that's really what it's going to come down to. There's not going to be this monolithic shift in organized medicine. I don't think that's possible. And evidence of it, of course, is what Dr. Ben was referring to with the censorship. But the important thing is, at the grassroots level, there is a shift that's taking place. People are waking up to these molecular mechanisms. And I think more and more practitioners are realizing there's more to the story. And that's good, because then they ask better questions, and that leads to better treatment and better resolution of the imbalances that people have. So this is just amazing to have this opportunity.
Well, I was thinking as you were talking that maybe someday some curriculum committee getting together to talk about the medical school curriculum, Maybe somebody could put them onto these shows. You know, go back and listen to the 30 or however many shows we've done now, and adjust the curriculum a little bit. Of course, it took about 2 seconds of thinking that. There's no way that's going to happen.
No, because suddenly then you've exposed that it isn't that. We don't need to get into the conspiracy theory. There's no benefit in that.
Yeah.
But what's quickly exposed is how did this primal knowledge not get incorporated in the beginning?
Right.
It begs a really uncomfortable question. How do we miss this major mechanism called oxygen, the second most reactive element on the planet? How do we ignore that it causes what's called oxidative stress, which creates a chain reaction of molecular mechanisms?
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to the beginning of time. So somehow that got missed. It's going to take a lot of bravado on the part of organized medicine to say, well, gee, we missed this, and now we're going to move forward. I mean, that would be the noble thing to do.
Yeah.
But it's a really challenging step for the system to take.
If we can't even look at the hard data in regards to COVID-19, I mean, and we're going to censor anyone who has data that contradicts what the mainstream line is, you know, I sure don't have a whole lot of hope curriculum committees are going to go back and say, oops, we missed this, and here's the root cause of all these inflammatory oxidative stress diseases. And by the way, big agriculture, you're going to have to shift also to, because the cure is found in the food and mismanagement of our food supply.
No, I think, I go back to the conversation we had probably a year ago where we were kind of trading our frustrations, and I was saying, I'm tired of dealing with the public. I'm just going to focus on practitioners. And you laughed. And you said, well, I'm tired of dealing with practitioners. I'm just going to focus on the public. And I think actually you're right. I think the challenge of educating highly educated people that they missed a major piece of the puzzle is almost an insurmountable task. But to take someone, that has not, as you say, has not been indoctrinated, and begin to explain to them how the body really works. Man, I mean, there were like 75 people in the audience in Lancaster, and they got it.
Yeah.
So then I asked the obvious question. I said, I figured there were about 40 farmers there. I said, how many of you all spray copper on your soil? Because I was expecting no one to know what I was talking about. And two guys raised their hands. One was a Mennonite, and the other was an Amish farmer. And I said, why do you do that? And they said, the one guy said, well, I test my soil every year, and it's always copper deficient. Mm-hmm. So I've learned to always add copper. The other farmer said, well, I've been doing it for 5 years because my mentor told me how important copper was. I've never known why until you did your presentation.
Yeah.
So it's like, but that's suddenly two. And that's going to influence the 40, and that 40 is going to influence 400, and that's really when the ripple effect is going to begin to shift the consciousness. I don't know what the tipping point is, what the 100th monkey or whatever the phrases are, but at some point the public is going to become more and more aware of this, and then that is, I think, what's going to shift the paradigm of organized medicine. I don't think we can take a frontal attack.
Yeah.
I think the public is going to drive it. That's kind of what I've come to realize.
Well, I agree. And when we get back, I'm going to talk just a little bit more on, because I was going to mention some of the levels in our soil and in our food and refer to a couple studies about that so people understand why we don't have the copper. But then we may also get into autism a little bit. And I think we have a question or two on the text line. Mm-hmm. When we get back from the break, we'll hit those questions right off the bat, and then I'll talk a little bit on the food, and we'll get into some other stuff. So everybody stick with us. We're talking with Morley Robbins, as we do every first Monday. His website, RCP, that stands for Root Cause Protocol, RCP123.org, and VeritasMedical.com, VeritasWellness.health. We're trying to get that up and running to get the grassroots education going. So y'all check those out. And this is You're the Cure on iTunes, YouTube, our website. All the archive shows are there, so y'all go listen there too. We'll be right back with Morley in just a second.
Welcome back in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580, 95.9 FM. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Check out veritasmedical.com. Past archive programs, you can certainly find it all there. veritasmedical.com. Special guest this morning on the show, Morley Robbins, here on the first Mondays with Morley, talking about copper uptake and trying to get rid of a little bit of iron. We got some text to get to. Do you want to do those now?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and read those, Wade.
Okay.
We'll start with those.
The first text, well, we've got several texts, but just real quick, some of it that Morley's already answered. And one texter said, is the inflammation and autoimmune conditions related to the iron dysregulation that Morley is talking about? Yes, we answered that one before we could read it. Another texter says, could you spell out the name of that test for bioavailable copper, Morley? Could you spell out the name of that for the bioavailable copper?
Yeah, it'll show up one of two ways. It'll be capital I as in India, capital L as in Linda, 2 production. And the other way it'll show up is interleukin 2 production. It's interleukin-2 production.
Okay.
And what it's measuring is that cytokine being produced at optimal levels in the tissue, and is it showing up in the blood as a result?
All right. Next text was, what's the likely chance of an MS patient receiving approval for the IL-2 blood lab test?
Dr. Ben, I don't know.
I would say slim to none, but you can just do a cash pay. And that's what Morley was alluding to, trying to get that negotiated down. But pretty much anybody can get any test. It's just if you want your insurance to cover it, your insurance is the determiner of that. And typically they're pretty narrow. Certain blood tests are just for certain diagnoses. And this is more of a obscure test, so I don't think it'll be covered, but just pay cash.
All right. If you have a question along the way, you can text in 806-745-5800, 806-745-5800.
I wanted to just speak to a little bit on the copper. You know, where is it? Why aren't we getting it? What's the deal? And of course, multiple reasons for that, but one thing I do want to point to, this is Don Davis' study that he published back in 2004. He's a PhD guy down at UT Austin, and he looked at 43 different garden crops, and he compared the nutrient content from 1958 samples that he had from 1958 compared to 1996, and he saw a tremendous drop in lots of different mineral and vitamin levels. And the quote I want to point out is, he said, the nutrient value has declined in recent decades while farmers have been planting crops designed to improve other traits. So the point of that quote is he's pointing out the farmers aren't picking varieties and hybrids of in different, you know, heirloom versus modern, whatever. They're not choosing what variety they're going to plant based on how much nutrient value that final product's going to have in it, that mustard green or that kale or lettuce or turnip green or apple or carrot. That's not the reason they would choose what variety to plant. They choose what variety based on shelf life and how pretty it looks, and will the consumer buy it? I mean, it's gotta be hauled, you know, 1,000 miles to the grocery store. It's gotta be picked a little early and then sit on a shelf a little longer. And you know, all these traits that give it more shelf life and more beauty. I was just watching a documentary on Amazon Prime called Pollinators. It's about the honeybees, but they also got into just regenerative agricultural practices in general. And they talked to an apple farmer, and he said, "Yeah, I hate spraying these chemicals. Wish I didn't have to." But the consumer demands this big, perfectly round, beautiful red apple. They won't buy a small, you know, misshapen, I guess you'd say, but not perfectly uniform. They just won't do it. And so the reason they spray those apple trees, I learned this little tidbit, is so an apple tree, like on one branch, is going to put out multiple blossoms. There's one main blossom, then there's multiple other smaller ones, and they'll all go on to produce an apple. But if you can knock off those secondary blooms and just let the one come to fruition, that one will be bigger and plumper and all that. So instead of getting 10 apples off this one branch that are all a little tinier, still would taste the same, but just it looks a little different. So that's why they spray, just to get this one big, plump, beautiful apple. Anyways, back to Don Davis. So that's his point. He was saying these farmers are making decisions based off other traits, not nutrient value. And then there was another study, and this was by Anne Marie Meyer. And she looked at the actual levels of all these different 20 different vegetable crops. And copper, of all the minerals, copper was depleted the most. An 81% depletion of copper. And this was comparing from the 1930s to the 1980s. So copper was the most depleted. Morley mentioned glyphosate. That's the main ingredient in Roundup. That's a chelator. It grabs these minerals and won't let go. And it grabs copper very, very aggressively and won't let go of it. The modern farming techniques of plowing, administering synthetic fertilizer, herbicides and pesticides, and the big one, glyphosate, that disrupts the microbes in the soil. It's the microbes in the soil that release the minerals out of the rock and the pebbles and all the sand and all that into a water-soluble form that the plant root can take up. So if you disturb the microbiome, the good bugs in the soil, you're going to disturb the mineral content. And that's been delineated out beautifully in multiple studies. The more you disrupt the soil, the less nutritious your food is. And so now it's pretty much across the board. The vegetables and the produce just don't have the minerals. And the cows. I've talked to local ranchers here. They biopsy the liver of their cow. And what's it depleted in? Copper. More than anything. And they give that copper supplementation back via mineral blocks, and the cow does better. Fertility rates are better, birth weights are better, infection rates are down. They don't have to doctor the cow as much. So it's clear that this disruption of our food production has played a big impact on the copper levels in the body. And that's not even mentioning the stress, which, of course, today's stress is so much more than what it was 100 years ago. And stress will take your copper offline also. So it's a combination of things. We need to quit eating glyphosate, which is incredible that's even still on the market after they just paid out $10.9 billion in a class action suit for lymphoma. Like, that's all it's going to do is cause lymphoma. It's going to disrupt so many different things in the body because it disrupts your gut flora. It disrupts the
minerals. Does that also contribute to obesity too, I guess, or no?
Anything that causes copper iron dysregulation is going to contribute to everything, including obesity. But
wow.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about that with Morley in the past, too. You can't burn fat cells if you have copper-iron imbalance. So it all boils down to these same basic things, and the factors that are creating this environment in our body are multi-factorial, but easily reversed. That's the whole point of the root cause protocol, the starts and the stops. Start doing certain things, but stop doing other things. And most of the other things that you're going to have to stop doing is modern food consumption. This civilized modern food, I think, is what Weston A. Price called it. But okay, Morley, that's all I had about the food, the farming. I always like to get that in there. So everyone out there, support your regenerative agriculture guys at the farmers market and elsewhere. Morley, any thoughts on that?
No, it's so important for people to realize that they've got to start making some very conscious decisions about the food they eat. The typical commercial food system is not going to support our physiology, and so we've got to go to farmers markets. We've got to make sure that we're seeking out the best possible food. You don't buy food in the center of the supermarket; always on the perimeter, and you've got to really scale back the processed food. It's just so important. And it's hard. People have these lifelong patterns of dietary habits, and they don't like making changes.
Yeah.
But it's just people have to make a decision. Do I want to feel better, or do I want to keep eating the food I've got?
Yeah.
The food that I've been using.
I had someone tell me this week, and I haven't verified this, so a little asterisk here, but Zach Bush, who I think our listeners know, we've had him on the show before, but he's pretty well known in the integrative world. I know Morley, you know Zach Bush.
Sure.
I was told that he pretty much said, I give up on changing adults' eating habits, adults won't change. They're not going to change, so I give up. I'm going to focus on farmers and regenerative agriculture and kids. Try to catch them early and get them changed early, but really change the farmers. So I thought that was interesting. It is hard. Someone's told me it's harder to get someone to change what they eat than it is to change their religion. But it's a challenge, no doubt. Well, Morley, I don't know if you want to get into the autism. I know that's a big thing in our practice. We have kids come that have various developmental delays, but autism in particular, it's part of our practice. And unfortunately, it's an increasing part of our society from, I think it was 1 in 5,000 when I was born in the early 1970s to 1 in 38 or 42, depending on what you're looking at. But a huge escalation. First case reported in the literature, I think it's 1934, there was one case. So just this hockey stick exponential rise, just as we're seeing in almost every chronic disease. But some thoughts on the autism.
Yeah, it can be really complicated, but that's not our intent. But to unpack it, I think it's important for the listeners to understand that, again, if copper and iron and oxygen are really important for life on this planet, well, they must be profoundly important for the developing fetus. And two of my favorite quotations that I've fixated on, and that they've helped, my fascination with these quotations has helped me to understand this dynamic. One was by a world-renowned magnesium expert, Mildred Seeley. We've referred to her on more than one occasion. But she was famous for saying that pregnancy is a magnesium-deficient state, which means there's a lot of stress involved, right? And then a world-renowned physiologist by the name of Joseph Barcroft, his theory was early 1900s to like 1945, and he started his work by studying mountain climbers, and then he gravitated to studying obstetrics. And his famous saying was, pregnancy is Mount Everest in utero. It's kind of a really provocative thing to say. And so what's the connection between those two statements, magnesium deficiency and Mount Everest in utero? Well, it turns out that the fetus is anaerobic. It's not relying on oxygen. It makes energy anaerobically. And when you understand that, all of the 8 of the 10 enzymes to allow us to break down glycogen so we can make energy require magnesium. That's why it's a magnesium deficient state. And what is Barcroft referring to? Well, when you're climbing Mount Everest, it's a hypoxic experience. There's a lack of oxygen. And so no one's ever put pregnancy in the context of this dynamic of what's happening to oxygen and how is energy being made and what's the management of oxygen in this developing tissue called a fetus or the baby. And it's absolutely fascinating how much was known back in the 30s and 40s and 50s and how everything has changed. And you alluded to in your opening remarks about the observation that women, it was recognized back in the late teens and early 20s that pregnant women were, quote, anemic. Well, the technical definition for the word anemia is low hemoglobin. That's what it was originally intended to mean. It's not enough hemoglobin per unit of blood volume to support adequate oxygenation of the tissue. Over time, it's come to mean lack of iron. But that's the most regressive and moronic definition you could use. We've talked about that. But the important is that back in the 20s, what happened was the League of Nations, as it was known back then, was studying this phenomenon, and they turned this natural condition of what's called hemodilution, where hemoglobin, that's the amount of hemoglobin that's being produced by the mom, is being spread over an increasing blood volume. because and there's increasing amniotic fluid. And so there's a lot of increased fluid in the woman's body to support the growth of the fetus in her womb. Well, it's a natural process for the hemoglobin to go down. That's what Mother Nature intended. And what's happened is that mechanism has been turned into a disease called anemia. And now modern birthing practitioners are being taught that if it gets below 12, get nervous, and if it gets below 10, get apoplectic, when in fact that's what's exactly what's supposed to happen. A major study done by Dr. Philip Steer in the UK studied 150,000 live births, and what he was looking for was what's the hemoglobin level in the mother and correlated it to the healthiest babies. And the healthiest babies were born to mothers whose hemoglobin was between 8.5 and 9.5, well below the threshold that's considered safe. And so there's an absolute confusion about what the level of hemoglobin should be, ignoring the concept of hemodilution, which is the cornerstone of obstetrics, but somehow they've kind of pushed that aside and they put it behind the curtain. You're not supposed to know about that. And now there's this fixation on iron levels and vitamin D levels. And why is this important is because when we come back to the dynamic between copper and iron and oxygen, it involves the tissue of the liver, the mother's liver and the baby's liver, the developing baby's liver. It involves the placenta and specific tissue within the placenta where this absolute transfer of minerals is taking place. Well, it turns out there's three completely different enzymes involved in this process. And they're called multi-copper oxidases. And what does that mean? It means that the enzyme has more than one copper atom, and it's working with oxygen. And again, copper is the only element on the planet that can work with oxygen cleanly and naturally and not create static. And so these multi-copper oxidases are called ceruloplasmin. We've talked about that a lot. There's another one that's found in our digestive tract called hefestin. But hefestin is also found in the, what are called, Dr. Ben, this will take you back to your first year in medical school. They're called syncytiotrophoblasts. Remember that? And those cells work exactly like the enterocytes of our digestive tract. And then there's other placental tissue that have an enzyme called zyklopen, Z-Y-K-L-O-P-E-N. Well, those three enzymes are communicating with each other to say, are we managing the oxygen? Are we managing the uptake of iron? And are we managing the uptake of copper? Because it's all got to take place in the developing fetus. And when does it really become critically important? In the third trimester. As the download of iron starts to take place, the download of copper starts to take place, and there's the fetus is anticipating the moment when it's going to need to start to work with this oxygen because it's not going to be in an anaerobic state after birth. And that's, it's absolutely amazing. But what should bring the listeners to their knees, especially the women who've been pregnant or may be pregnant or who are anticipating becoming pregnant, is that no doctor that they've ever been to has ever measured their magnesium status. No doctor has ever measured the copper level and or ceruloplasmin level in their body. And no doctor has taught them that, well, your hemoglobin is supposed to go down. So let's, and what's absolutely amazing to me is that, and there are several studies that point this out, that the other technical term that I'm sure you remember from your medical school is that what is the fetus? It's an obligate intrauterine parasite. Fascinating to think about. And we think of it as this loving little baby. No, in clinical terms, it's a parasite. And the significance of that is that it's got a very specific process that it needs to create energy. And the fact of the matter is, even babies born to, quote, anemic mothers have healthy levels of hemoglobin when they're born, which really begs the question, why are we so worried about the mother's hemoglobin status if the baby, the parasite, always comes out normal, with normal hemoglobin? I mean, when I read that, I was absolutely mesmerized by the fact, why are we getting so preoccupied with maternal hemoglobin and iron status when, in fact, Mother Nature has designed these little obligate parasites to get what they need and to come out with optimal hemoglobin? It's absolutely amazing. And where does autism fit into all this? Well, what happens is if the mom has low copper, low bioavailable copper, iron is going to start to build in her system. Well, why would the mom have low copper? Because she's taking prenatals that have iron in them. And it's going to force a change in the dynamics of copper metabolism. And as soon as the mom has building levels of iron in her liver, exact same thing is going to be happening to the fetus. It's axiomatic. And babies are being born with livers that have high levels of iron because they have low levels of copper, because these three copper enzymes aren't communicating because they're not being fed properly. And then the baby gets exposed to vaccines that have toxins. And the liver is detox central. And when the liver is full of iron, it can't clean out the toxins. And as soon as the baby gets exposed to, you know, a really complicated vaccine, it creates a massive storm of oxidative stress. And the liver and the brain communicate with each other. And when the liver shuts down, it then creates chaos in the brain. And for those who are research-oriented, Google autism, oxidative stress, and what you're going to find is that autism is oxidative stress on steroids. And so why does oxidative stress exist? Because there's not enough bioavailable copper. So it was fascinating to begin to piece together the very, again, molecular mechanisms of these enzymes that aren't managing the download and the uptake of copper and iron, which then leads to the mismanagement of oxygen, which then leads to the creation of oxidative stress.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. And the point I want to make for the listener, and we got to wrap it up, but here's the main point is, this is all about building resiliency. If your body is nourished properly and maintained properly and you've stewarded your health well, your mitochondria are going to function well. You're going to be able to make energy and clear exhaust. You're not going to build up this oxidative stress because we're all going to be exposed to different toxins and different challenges, like the toxicity in the vaccines. When you have a healthy mitochondria, it can withstand the onslaught better. I mean, we'll sure. all be consumed at some point with too much toxic burden if we're not careful. But for these babies, when their mitochondria is already behind the eight ball coming out of the womb, there's a matter of it. Just, there's not resiliency there. And so, yes, there's lots of different associations with this autism epidemic, including vaccines, which I'm not going to get into now. We don't have time to, but I'll refer you to all the different podcasts we've done. You can go to our website and look at that under the vaccine section. But one quote, and I don't have it in front of me, so I'll paraphrase, but this was Dr. Kelly, who normally is called to the witness stand to defend the vaccine on behalf of the government in the Vaccine Injury Compensation Court. And he, in Hannah Pauling's case and others, has said, and the quote is in J.B. Hanley's book, basically, yes, this child was injured and the regression into autism occurred secondary to the vaccine because this child was susceptible because of mitochondrial dysfunction. Just lays it right out there. Yes, this vaccine caused the injury, but it caused it because this was a susceptible kid, and the susceptibility lays in dysfunctional mitochondria. It's exactly what we've been talking about this entire hour. But it's not just autism. It's autoimmune. It's cancer. It's heart disease. It's go right down the board. Just Google your disease and oxidative stress and inflammation. Is there a connection? What you're going to find 99% of the time is yes, there is a connection. So drill down and what is oxidative stress, as Morley's laid out nicely today. Inability to deal with oxygen, and that's because of this copper-iron mismatch and this excess iron in the body. So donate blood regularly. Studies show people who do that have better health outcomes. So just get in the routine of doing that donation. Eat real food. RCP123.org has the starts and stops on there. Download the ebook. Morley's got social media following you can do. Go back on our website, listen to all the shows if you really want to geek out on all the different diseases we've talked about. But it's going to be the same message over and over and over. But the reason we keep going back to it is partly because I like to hear all the different connections, the science behind it all. But part of it is also because people put the religion of science up on this pedestal. And if a scientist doesn't say it, then I'm not going to believe it. And if it's not coming from some white coat bureaucrat in some three-letter initial office in Washington, D.C. or Atlanta, Georgia. So we need to kind of combat some of that intellectualism with the data, with the science, and with the studies that just aren't talked about in medical school and mainstream media. So, Morley, thank you for sharing your insights again today.
Absolutely. What might be fun for people is if you were to do a screenshot of all the articles I've sent you since 2017. I think people would be absolutely blown away by that.
Well, I'll tell you real
quick. I mean, they know that our conversations are based on science. I don't think they have a real visceral understanding of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of articles I've brought to your attention with my commentary, your responses back. I just think people need to understand that this is what I'm equally impressed with is Dr. Ben's penchant for going into the research and doing his own independent research, which then reinforces what I'm finding. He's not taking it at face value. I think that's really where you've taken it to another level. You've dug into the research, like to find out that Dr. Myers found out there's an 81% loss of copper. I didn't know that. That's amazing that information was accessible and that you were able to really nail that down for people. So it's just that people need to realize the information's out there. It takes discipline and devotion to find it, but the fact that we have this dialogue is an amazing testament to our commitment to bringing this truth forward, and I really appreciate the opportunity to do it.
Well, thank you, Morley, for spending an hour with us and sharing all that you've learned over the past month and beyond. So we really appreciate your time and efforts, and we'll keep bringing the truth and the science and the data for those that need it, and we will be back next month with First Mondays with Morley again with some more research, I'm sure. But until then, go back to the archive page, listen to more, and go to rcp123.org to see all Morley's stuff. Morley, thank you again for being with us today. Enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Take care.
And you've been listening to You're the Cure, brought to you again by VeritasMedical.com. Check out the website, VeritasMedical.com. Past archive programs, lots of other valuable information, VeritasMedical.com.